The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure, high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online, on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
Like syndicates.
So they're all like my issue with all that stuff, REITs, 401ks, mutual funds, it's all retail investments where there's heavy hidden fees.
Yep.
And at the end of the day, the investor gets screwed. I mean, yep. Going back to, I was making 20-30% returns of my money in my first couple of rentals. I mean, people don't believe me. They can check out my whiteboard video where I go through all the math at simplepassivecashflow.com/returns.
Mm-hmm.
But, as a 20-year-old kid, I was like, well, why the hell would I want to put my money in this stuff that makes 8-10%?
If it does,
it goes
that,
up and down,
it
go, right, like a roller coaster. Up and there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always felt that if you really want to invest in the stock market, for example, just buy an index fund. It's low cost and forget about it. It's going to follow the market anyway, and then get involved in other things,
Right.
Because it's not for everybody. Okay. So that was, you said nine. So that was like 2016, you said?
2000 and
built it up.
16, 15, I had about 11 rentals. And that's when I started to transition to being more of a passive investor into large syndication deals.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit BeinhackerLaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Aloha, everybody. This is Lane Kawoka. I currently own 5,000 rental units, syndicator, author, and real estate entrepreneur. Today, we're going to be talking about passive real estate and how I got out of my day job of being an engineer doing this.
All right, Lane. So I appreciate you coming on the show, talking to me today about, real estate investing and all the stuff that you do. I think, I was thinking off the mic how we connected. I think it's through one of the match sites, like Matchmaker FM or Podmatch, or unless your publicist found me, that happens a lot too.
Yeah, I think the publicist found
connected
you.
Us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe can you go into your, I'm going to go into your background first, because I know you worked into real estate and you've been in the business a long time, what your training is, how you got to know real estate, and then we can get into all the tips and things that are going on through your, it's a podcast too, right? It's a website, a podcast, a club. You got all kinds of things going on. You're a real marketer. So, but can we go backwards and start when you were a little child living in in Hawaii? You grew up in Hawaii, right? You were born and raised in Hawaii?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, I kind of followed this, what I call the linear path. Parents went to college, so they thought it'd be good for me to go to college and
right,
follow this
happens,
path
right?
of,
yeah.
Go to school, get a good job somewhere along the way, playing. Didn't really go to the beach. I was more kind of a geek when I was grew up, but must have been good at math and science. So I kind of went on this path to become an engineer.
Okay. It's good college, background, right? Good background for business.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, the only reason why I did it was, you know, you Google highest paid salaries without having to go to, you know, getting a doctorate or master's and it's an engineering degree.
Yeah, you're probably right.
You know, I'm no dummy, right? I want to find the easiest.
You're right. Now it's all engineering and computer science. Yeah.
Right. So I went to work for the man, and, you know, again, following all this like financial dogma they tell us to do, like put money in your 401k, buy a house to live in. I bought a house a couple years out of college because I was a really diligent saver back then, putting away maybe like 50, 100 grand out of my paycheck every year.
That's probably rare, but good.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people out there, and a lot of them are podcast listeners, right? As opposed to Netflix all day kind of people.
Yeah, right. Well, they're looking for good content, hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
but you're right. Don't we just kind of follow? I mean, that's what happens. Our parents say do this and we don't know any better and we do it. I had a guy on my podcast a month ago, and he's in the orthopedic space in the middle of medical school. He's like, what am I doing this for? He did it because he grew up in a traditional Indian family, and you don't become a doctor or a lawyer, you're a loser. And yeah. You know, but I guess somewhere along the line, you kind of start questioning things, right?
I mean, that's what makes this tough, especially for like a lot of white collar workers, right? Like we have the education, we spent so many years, so much money in private school, college, you know, it's just, you kind of give it away when you kind of go to more the entrepreneurial side.
Yeah. It's like you're wasting it, right? You feel bad about it. I'm sure there's a lot of guilt.
I mean, my parents don't know what the hell I do today. They think I'm like a real estate agent.
That's what they think, right? Yeah. That's so funny. Yeah, they have no clue.
No clue. I bought this big house because, you know, most young professionals, you're working on the road a lot of times because you're the guy they send out there.
Yeah.
I was working construction as a construction manager, and had this big house to myself, was only home on Saturday, so decided to rent it out. And that was the start of things. That's how I got a taste of passive cash flow. And I was like, shoot, if I just did this several more times, I'll be able to, you know, increase my salary or increase my income and eventually fire the boss.
And this was all in Hawaii, meaning you went to school in Hawaii and then you got the job in Hawaii. You're doing construction management in Hawaii.
No, I went to University of Washington up in Seattle. Sure. So it's kind of working up in the Pacific Northwest. Was kind of working that for maybe about 12 years until I finally pulled the plug and, just went full-time real estate. But technically, I mean, passive income exceeded expenses. So that's the point where you hit that critical mass and you're financially independent.
You can make, exactly. So do you think like you were a little lucky, like you kind of fell into it because you just kind of discovered it, or was it something you were like, I'm going to research real estate and I want to learn more about it, or how do you think?
Yeah, I mean, very accidental. I just kind of fell in it. But then, you know, as an engineer, you're good at math. I mean, it's not like rocket science or anything. But I was
a lot of people shy away from math. Yeah.
I'm making like 20-30% returns a year on my money on a simple passive rental property that nothing special. I mean, we're not talking about like wholesaling houses or flipping houses.
Right.
To me, that's all the stuff you do when you don't have a good paying job and you got a lot of free time on your hands.
Like, right.
I kind of work with high net worth working professionals that are busy, successful business operators, where your highest and best use is, doing that. But how can we invest in real estate to leverage our returns and get the tax benefits that way?
And you mostly buy and hold. You said you're not flipping, you're not doing that kind of stuff. So you're just buying, holding for a while, maybe exchanging and building a passive income.
That's right. Like when I first started, and there's a journey to this, when you start out, you're buying little single family homes,
right?
Trying to get to accredited status. Once your income level gets higher, or you start to build up a substantial amount of net worth, maybe $500,000 in net worth.
Okay.
That's where you start to get more involved in private placements and syndications as a passive LP partner. But everybody starts at different places. I kind of started at the bottom, at zero net worth. Bought 11 rentals from 2009 to 2015.
Okay.
And then eventually transitioned to larger, more passive deals.
So some of these larger deals, it's not all your money. You are syndicating and putting them together, raising other capital.
Right. And this is kind of where I discovered, by joining different masterminds, getting around higher net worth investors, that you know, rental properties, they're great, right? When your net worth is lower, you don't have access to good deals with good operators,
right?
But, you know, I mean, you put all the debt in your name, you put all this headache, tenants, termites, and toilets.
Right, exactly. The three T's.
Can you find any good reason if you were an accredited investor that you want to own rentals?
Well, isn't that the story, right? Where people go, oh, I owned real estate. We had two condos and it was a nightmare. And they said, I would never invest in real estate.
Yeah. And they're doing all the bad activities, such as paying down their debt. You know, right. Sophisticated investors, you know, they don't do that. This is your typical mom and pop investor, right? Yeah. 80 to 90% of investors out there are mom and pop, and they're unsophisticated and they don't step up to the big stuff.
Right. Right. But, and they can't make it past that. Cause I mean, you started there too, right? But you got out of that by growing and building net worth. I'm sure the days you got rid of having to plumb toilets, you were like, it was probably one of the best days in real estate of your life.
Well, I never did that, right? Like, I don't know how to.
You got people early on.
I don't know how to evict the tenant. Like, that's what you hire professional property managers. And that's why you go into deals that cash flow, you know, they have a 1% rent to value ratio where you can pay a third party professional to do all that crap for you.
Right. You got to figure that into your calculations.
Right.
You got to look at a deal. Cause if not, if you've got to do all the work, then you're really not getting a return on your money because you're putting all your time in. That's at least that's the way I look at it.
Right. But it, you know, there's a paradigm out there, right? If you're some young kid, you deliver mail for a living, making under 50, 60 grand a year.
Right.
That may make sense. But if you're a working professional, doctor, lawyer, dentist, engineer, it makes absolutely no sense for you to spend your time and energy on that type of stuff.
Right. But it doesn't mean you shouldn't be investing in it. It means how you should be investing in it.
Right. Right. And just like how we were saying, you know, like our parents' generation that went to school, didn't invest, bought their houses to live in, you know, it works. Just like being a mom and pop investor, you know, and I think that shows the power of real estate. You can have a bad strategy and still ends up pretty dang good. Right.
Yeah. I think you and I, from a mathematical standpoint, could argue that, you know, buying and owning your own home and living in it's probably not the most economical way to spend your money, but it's the best way to shelter your family as opposed to dealing with a landlord and, you know, the whims of as a tenant, I mean.
Yeah. You know. I mean, my opinion there is, you know, most people in this world are really bad with their money. Right? They spend more than they make. I would argue maybe 90, 95% of people are like that. Those people, they should go buy their house to live in because it's essentially a forced piggy bank for them. But the people in my group, you know, these are the guys who max out the 401ks, ferociously listen to podcasts all day long about this stuff.
Right.
And for those people, yeah, you guys are smart enough and worthy to go and, you know, play on the offense and grow your money like how you're saying.
Now, are all of your, is most of your wealth in real estate, or are you kind of balanced now?
Oh, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. I mean, I'm the operator, right? I operate this stuff. So of course I have trust in what I do. So I would say 95% of my holdings are in hard assets, real estate. I have no stocks, mutual funds, any of those retail type of investments.
Are you invested in REITs or anything like that? They're all like syndicates.
They're all like my issue with all that stuff, REITs, 401ks, mutual funds, it's all retail investments where there's heavy hidden fees.
Yep.
And at the end of the day, the investor gets screwed. I mean, going back to, you know, I was making 20-30% returns of my money in my first couple of rentals. I mean, people don't believe me. They can check out my whiteboard video where I go through all the math at simplepassivecashflow.com/returns.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, as a 20-year-old kid, I was like, well, why the hell would I want to put my money in this stuff that makes 8-10%?
If it does,
it goes
that
up and down,
it go, right,
like a
it
roller
can go
coaster.
Up and down. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always felt that if you really want to invest in the stock market, for example, just buy an index fund. It's low cost and forget about it. It's going to follow the market anyway. And then get involved in other things, you know,
right?
Because it's not for everybody. Okay. So that was, you said nine, so that was like 2016, you said?
2000 and
built it up.
16, 15, I had about 11 rentals. And that's when I started to transition to being more of a passive investor into large syndication deals.
So you started investing in passive deals. You weren't necessarily the operator at that point. You were just learning about them. So how did you find, like, if I'm a guy and I'm out there and I got money, how did you start finding deals to invest in?
Well, I had actually started my podcast, Simple Passive Cashflow, a couple of years prior. And at the time, I was just investing in little, like, rental properties or turnkey rentals, is what we right. kind of call them in our industry. And I was telling people how to do it. You know, I mean, the reason why I started the podcast was because a lot of my friends were asking, you know, how are you buying a property in Birmingham or Atlanta? Right. They didn't even visit it, right? Of course, you know, your friends, you know, you tell them what you do and nobody listens. So that's why I made the podcast, because, you know, just
put out good content, put it out there. All right. So everybody wants to know. So if you live in Hawaii or even Washington State for that matter, how do you invest in a turnkey property in Alabama?
Yeah, I mean, you have to develop your team, right? Of broker. The broker's going to help you find the property. Of course, you always got to check the broker, because you never trust the broker. They're always trying to get you to buy stuff, right?
Right. That's how they make their money.
Right. So you have to also get a third-party inspector on your team, right? To make sure you're buying, like, a physically good property. But I would say the most important person is getting a good property manager on your team, because a property manager is good to make sure that, you know, they're kind of walking in the deal with you. They're going to eventually operate it for you. They're the ones that's kind of giving you the thumbs up. Yeah, we're going to get $950 a month on this, or it's in a garbage area, or it's a good area. I mean, that's, you should involve that them off in the beginning. The trouble is like, the good property managers don't want to work with newbie investors.
Right.
So the key is educating yourself first, so you don't scare a good property manager away.
So how did you go about finding property managers in other places where you weren't located, or any of these other professionals that you needed?
I mean, now it comes down to the golden rule, which is, like, your network is your net worth. Referrals, right? Finding other pure passive investors that do the same thing. Just copy what they do, work with the people they do, and help each other out. Different vendors, HVAC guys, plumber guys. I mean, that's what you do when you're a scrappy, you know, investor in the beginning.
Yeah.
But as we said, you know, once your net worth drips over $1 million, stop dealing with this type of nonsense, right? You don't talk to brokers, property managers. You're more looking for larger deals as a passive investor, where somebody's taking care of these asset management headaches for you.
Right. So do you have a certain group of people that bring you deals all the time that you've developed over time?
I mean, a lot of it is, like, my partners. I mean, a lot of them are more on the acquisition side. So a lot of it is, like, getting in good graces with the brokers. In commercial real estate, brokers control deals.
Right.
Especially because we go into deals that are stabilized, 90% occupied or more. You know, none of this hairy, you know, distressed stuff.
Right, right.
We want stabilized assets. So therefore, brokers control those deals. So we need to be buddy-buddy with them. And for the broker, their biggest concern is, can these guys close? Are they proven?
Right.
So that's the hardest part, is becoming part of that echelon. If not, and getting the good deals too. I mean, 99% of the deals we pass on, we don't look at.
Yeah, it's that high.
The first page. I mean, you know, like, people look at LoopNet. LoopNet is known as the graveyard for deals.
Right.
That's where you shop, you put them when nobody wants to buy it.
Right. Yeah, no, the better deals, the brokers are circulating them amongst their networks. They don't want to put it on LoopNet.
Right. They want to put it out to, as a pocket listing, to a proven buyer that they know that they can close, because that's the biggest thing for a broker. They don't really care if they're going to get $1 million or more in sales price, although they should. All they care about is that they're closing, so they can get their commission check and so they can go feed their family.
Right. Right. Sure. But you think it's that high where 9 out of 10 you're passing on?
Most I'd probably say 1,000 deals. I mean, 1,000 deals out there, we might pick one to do.
Really?
I mean, it's dismal. I mean, there's so many unsophisticated mom and pop investors that are still buying large properties anywhere from 40 units to 150 units.
That are just bad deals?
They're just bad. I don't know. I mean, they don't fit your criteria, right? Yeah, don't fit our criteria. I mean, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, they could involve fixing up and equity needs to be put in. Maybe that's what they do, right? I don't know. Yeah. So, okay. So I was going to ask you, so now do you have, like, cause I see all the pictures behind you, you have these mastermind groups and people participate with Simple Passive Cash Flow and they learn from you. And is that what you've basically built now, along with your investing?
As a passive investor, you're biggest thing is building your network,
right,
of other passive investors to figure out who to invest with and really who to stay away from, maybe more importantly.
Maybe, right.
I mean, it's as you were saying earlier, this whole game is a marketing game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to tell who are the institutional operators that have been around for decades. Granted, you may or may not want to invest with them because they have higher fees or splits for passive investors. But it's really hard to tell them from some newbie who's on their first, second, third, fourth, fifth deal. I wouldn't want to invest with them.
Right.
We've done over 37 deals thus far. I mean, but it's, you know, it's hard to identify if you're a passive investor and you know nothing. You just get caught up in the marketing. And I tell all my guys, like, the best way is to stay close with people who have invested in these people in the past and build relationships with those people and kind of work together.
Okay. So can we talk about, like, if somebody's just getting started, let's say there's, you know, I have a lot of these, they might own a small business. They're buying a couple of 2-family homes, 3-family homes. How do you have a process whereby you evaluate a deal, or that maybe it's, I'm sure it's evolved, right? But where you would evaluate a deal the same way every time, like it had to fit a certain criteria. And if it did, you would look at it. If it didn't, you throw it out. Or do you take them one at a time? How do you go about doing that? And how do you teach people to go about doing that?
I mean, if you're talking a business entrepreneur, I mean, their highest and best use is in their business. They have no business buying rental properties and operating it on their own, even with a property manager, in my opinion.
Right.
I mean, that's where they should be more of a passive investor in a bigger deal where they invest with the pros as more of a private placement offering.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000, that's L-A-W to 21000, to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
Right. But let's say they're a younger couple. I've had some like this. They're a younger couple. One may work. The other one may do some other things. And they're looking to get started in real estate. But they always seem to have, like, not the best methodology when it comes to evaluating a property. You know, they look at a property.
You're talking about the lower net worth guys under $250,000, $500,000 net worth.
Yeah, like when you first got started. Yeah.
I would say, you know, listen to my podcast. A lot of the techniques are in the first dozen podcasts. If they want, they can go download my free e-course on buying a remote rental. I think you guys can go download it at, if you text the word basic to 314-665-1767, I mean, it's the free, I made a free e-course for you guys to go learn how to do this. I mean, that's how you get started. Yeah, that's how you get started. I mean, you get out there and you just educate yourself on what makes a good market, what kind of properties to buy. You know, we don't buy the high-end luxury stuff. We don't buy the low-end war zone stuff. We stay in the middle, B and C class. And then the biggest thing is the analyzer. I mean, people want to go to my website. I think you just Google simplepassivecashflow.com/analyzer. It pops up. I mean, you can just download it right there and start to play with the spreadsheet yourself and understand the numbers and just go and underwrite 20 deals. And you start to figure out where the water level is on these things that'll start the cash flow.
Yeah. How do you measure return? You were saying that you get 20, 30% return on your money in these deals. Is it cash on cash? Does it account for equity increase, or is it really just cash flow?
Yeah, I mean, cash on cash, normally about like high single digits, but the way you're making money, you know, the tenant's paying down your mortgage for you, you're getting equity built up there, the tax benefits, and then, you know, any type of appreciation. You know, granted, we don't really assume too much appreciation because, you know, we don't invest in places like California, New York, Hawaii, Washington, because those places just don't cash flow, period, right? And they're very cyclical.
Right. Yeah.
And in my opinion, they're a little bit risky, in my opinion. There's so much of a balloon in those prices a lot of times.
Yeah, the prices are ridiculous in some of those markets.
We mainly invest in red states where there's landlord-friendly laws, a little bit better economic, you know, environments. And it's very, like, a lot more, like, linear kind of growth. It's boring. We like boring.
Well, you like less risk is what you like, right? So you're looking at total return then. What kind of equity increase, not equity increase, but what kind of equity increase do you expect from mortgages, debt being paid down, tax deductions, as well as the cash flow of the property? That's where you get to 15, 20, 30% on your money.
Right. Effectively, what is my net worth doing? And that's at the end of the day, that's the score.
Right. Okay. But then what do you, so somebody builds up all this net worth, then what do they do? What do they do with
Well, exactly. Exactly to like what's flawed in the normal financial like dogma, which is the accumulation theory, where they say, hey, build up all this net worth, $2 to $4 million, then live off the pile of money, right? Which in, when you get to that point, you're going to want cash flow. And that's what we're doing today. We're creating mini streams of income, mini pensions. But the beauty for a successful business entrepreneur or working professional is you don't need to eat the streams of cash flow today. You can take these mini streams of income, whether they be rental properties or syndication deals that you're in, take the cash flow from that and put it into putting down for more down payments, more deals for them to kind of create cash flow babies in a way.
Now,
that's the method.
Do you leverage all of your properties? I mean, is there debt on most of your deals?
Of course. I mean, that's what the wealthy do, right? You don't want to pay off your properties and drive your return on equity down to nothing.
Right.
We want to take as much leverage as possible, but also take kind of hedge the downside to make sure that we have the cash flow there. So in case of bad times, we can hold on to the asset.
Right. Well, I think people don't understand the math of that, right? If you own $1 million building, but you only put $100,000 down and you're getting, let's say, 5% in rent off the million, your return is on the money you put into the building, not the overall building.
Right. I mean,
your return's much higher with leverage.
I rent my house. I don't think it's smart to buy your house, to be honest.
So you sold that house you had originally?
That's correct. My landlord owns the property outright. He's making maybe $10,000, $20,000 a year. That's right. What, like 2%, if that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a horrible return on equity. And his net worth is not increasing.
And he has no debt on the property?
Right.
Okay. So that's an interesting comment, though. A lot of people don't look at it that way. And I agree with you. You're a wealthy guy. You're successful in real estate, but you do not own your own home.
Well, I probably should own my own.
You could if you wanted to, right?
I don't know. I just do it to inspire the younger people who shouldn't, to be honest. Yeah. Well, I mean, I have this thought process where I don't think people should buy their house to live in until their net worth is at least 1 to 2 to 3 times what the house is.
Okay. That's your rule of thumb?
Yeah. But like I said, most people, this doesn't apply because most people are really horrible with their money.
Right.
Buy a house, so it's a forced piggy bank for you. And go work 40, 50 years, by the way, too.
Yeah, but I'm not even sure after 40, 50 years, it's a forced piggy bank, but I don't know if your return's been so great. You've had non-deductible expenses. You probably got rid of your mortgage a while ago, so you don't have any interest deductions anymore. You got repairs all the time. None of it's deductible. It's probably not a very efficient way to, you know, owning a home. It's the best way to shelter your family, right? Because a lot of people don't want to feel like they might get evicted or they got to deal with a landlord if you need to fix something in the house or whatever. But economically, I don't think it's the most efficient way to
I agree. But you know, those other two points you brought up, the emotional component. I mean,
yeah, those matter.
They matter, and I'm not going to discount that. But hey, right. You know, if you do it this other way for a handful of years, set your family up, you can live like how people dream.
Yeah, you can make it easier on yourself.
Financial independence is not for everybody. I mean, if everybody said, "What, you know, go buy a handful of rentals, don't, you know, suck it up and rent for a little bit," you know, maybe you can't put up some, you know, some pictures on the wall or something like that.
Right.
You're gonna have to move a couple more times than you thought. Like, I mean, for what's it worth? Well, you don't have to work. I mean, most of my guys, they can retire in 5 to 10 years or less.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think, I think the emotional component matters, right? If the things that you recommend somebody they can't sleep at night because they're not comfortable with whatever they're doing, that's got to factor in, even if it's not the best use of their money and the best decisions from a financial standpoint, right? I mean,
yeah,
not for everybody.
Not for everybody. And that's cool, right? Like, if you guys don't want to do this other method that's proven by math, I mean,
right,
that's awesome. I mean, you know, if everybody said what I'm doing and do these alternative wealth practices, society would crumble.
Right. Of course. Right. No, isn't that, I was reading about that the market itself, you can't beat the market if you're an investor, but all these hedge fund guys and whatever that invest and chase the latest hot company, if they didn't exist, the market would collapse. You need them to support the boring stuff that is tried and true and keeps going. It's all part of the same system. So you can't have everybody invest in real estate and quit their job and become independent. Society would collapse. We need people to work. We need people that don't want to do that, that want to go to work every day. Although a lot of people don't want to go to work every day anymore. So that's changing.
Right. Just like your audience, right? Like, if everybody wanted to be an entrepreneur, who would be our drones to kind of take care of
work,
right?
Yeah, I agree. Look, Lane, there's too many. I meet a lot of people should not be entrepreneurs. A lot of people. They all, you know, they want to chase the dream. Don't want to work. They don't realize how much work it is, but they want to have freedom and they just don't have the skills or they don't spend the time learning. It's like you said, right? If somebody wants to invest in real estate, take it seriously. Read your stuff. Take your free course, go to one of your events, whatever it is, become a student of what you want to do, or you will get your head handed to you.
Yeah.
You know,
like I'm not a freaking real estate guru. You're not going to like be put into this course where you got to pay $25,000, $30,000, $50,000 at some point. It's freaking free on the podcast.
Right.
Get the free e-course.
Yeah.
Right. Everything's on the website for free. You want to learn about turnkey rentals, go to simplepassivecashflow.com/turnkey. That's the guide right there. Right. It's out there. If you guys want it, go get it. It's
free. You're just paying it forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But look, I mean, it's like college, right? Like, I'm not a huge fan of college.
But we can't get rid of it. People still have to go to college, right?
Right. I mean, most people should go to college, I think, right? Because it helps people get jobs. And most people need jobs because if everybody was just entrepreneurs, I mean, most people are entrepreneurs. They don't do anything.
Right.
If you see an entrepreneur on somebody's LinkedIn today, you know that they can't find a real job.
Right. Because real entrepreneurs don't say that they're entrepreneurs.
Right.
We really don't.
And I know your guys' audience are similar to mine's, right? Like when we quit our day jobs, it's difficult because that's part of our identity.
Right.
Now we're kind of lumped in with all those random entrepreneurs that couldn't get into college.
Right.
And we're kind of losing that. And that's the reason why it's so hard.
It's definitely difficult. And I think you're right. A lot of people should go to college and should get an education. But, you know, college is a thinking experience anyway. It's an exercise in thinking. You don't really learn how to get along in the real world. You learn that at your job or, you know, like you learned about you didn't learn about real estate in college, did you? A little bit, maybe.
No, but.
No, it was all out in the real world, right?
The one good thing about college, which sucks for kids today in the pandemic, is like, you know, you go to the parties, you build your network, you learn how to be a likable person.
Right.
I tell people that come into my group, I mean, you don't need to be an ex-landlord. You don't need to know anything about real estate investing. You just need to be a likable guy and like kind of learn to where people are putting their money and have them trust you. You trust them. And you figure out, you know, where to best put your money. I mean, and I a lot of people in my group are first generation wealth people. So it takes a while for them to grasp this concept, but there's, you know, the second, third generation trust fund kids in a way, they know how the world works. And it's really refreshing when you get one of these guys and they're like, you know what, Lane, I'm stupid, but I likable guy. And I know the right people.
I know so many people like that. I know that they just, because networking and who you know and who you connect with is what it's all about. Because there's people out there that will help you because there's other people help them. And if you help there was a sales guy who used to say that if you help enough people get, you can have anything in life. If you help enough other people get right, get what they
want. I think Nightingale or something like that.
Yeah. Maybe Zig Ziglar or Tom Hopkins. Yeah. One of those guys said that. Brian Tracy, maybe. I don't remember all that kind of stuff. All right.
But
so
the key is to get, like, I think too many people under $250,000 puts too much emphasis on this networking thing. To me, when you're under that realm, under that rung, you got to stop wasting your time talking to people. Because number one, the people that you're interacting with are kind of just out for themselves. They're all like trying to put their own oxygen mask on. That's why you never go to a random networking thing, because everybody's looking out for themselves.
Right.
You got to spend your time. You got to go make some money in your business. Get that wheel working. But when you start to get to a certain level, $500,000 net worth, I think that's where this precedence really starts to kick in.
Do you like mastermind groups? Like, should people find, you know, as they build their net worth and they get up there, should they be networking and involved in groups that are more at that level that they want to achieve?
I would agree, but, you know, be careful because I always ask the question when I'm kind of looking for, you know, I was kind of like move around trying to get, you know, different circles. I mean, and it's hard for me to tell sometimes, is this a real mastermind or is this a fake one with a bunch of newbies in it that just happened to pay 25 grand? You know?
Yeah, that happens, right? Yeah, it's not always the price. You want to go to a group where everyone else is wealthier than you are.
Yeah. Or just haven't been suckered into paying the fee, right?
Right.
By some guru. I mean, this is masterminds. Typically, you stay from guru masterminds because you just have a bunch of fanboys there that have paid an exorbitant price to get there. Right. What you're looking for is that community where it's legit, and it may be very expensive, may not be. The price doesn't kind of dictate, you know, the quality of it.
Right.
But yeah, I'm generally a fan of masterminds, but have it be a legit one. If not, find yourself a consultant.
Okay.
Get your private coaching that way.
Now, I see a lot of these photos behind you. Are these groups that you've run, classes you've held, seminars you've participated in? What are these?
Most of these are like my private investor, accredited investor group. I run a family office, Ohana Mastermind.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of a close-knit group, you know, passive investors, and they typically want to be private, and they don't want to waste their time, right? Interacting with lower net worth guys. So, you know, that's the kind of the service that I provide of my guys is, you know, I curate the group and I curate the content, and we build relationships within this sort of curated group.
Is the family office a multi-family office, or is it just your family?
So his family office is like, you know, taking from the term of family office, right? You know, 100 millionaire families, the way they do things is, you know, they have, you know, if you remember like Batman and Alfred, that kind of ran all his business activities for him.
Yeah.
Well, most people listening, y'all can't afford a family office person.
Right.
So what do you do when you're going from $1 million to $10 million? Well, you do it in a group setting. And I think the group component, especially when you get high quality working professionals together that are thinking the right way, heading in the right direction, net worth wise and mindset wise, that these are the people in 5, 10, 20 years that you've built that relationship with, and you can kind of huddle around different life ideas. So when people come in, we teach them about investing in syndication deals, what's a good deal, what's a bad deal. We teach them about infinite banking, the legal, the tax. We didn't get too much into the tax stuff today.
Right.
But, you know, but that's all like the hard stuff, right? The soft stuff is the stuff that comes later after you get the relationships. How do I raise my family? How do I talk to my daughter about money? You know, how do I structure my trust in a way, not the legal stuff. The legal stuff is easy, but how do you put in those soft, like the soft things in there that your family can keep growing is 90% of money leaves a family in 2 to 3 generations.
Yep.
Because their kids screw it up.
Yep. Divorce, all kinds of issues. People are just really bad with money.
Yeah. Really, well, I think from my experience, I think, you know, the first generation wealth person, I mean, most people listening, your guys' net worth will eventually get to $1 million. But by the time you get there in your 50s or 60s, your teaching years with your children have long passed you. Right? So what we try and do, we try and accelerate that, get you your time back so you can spend your time not on making the money, but how do you enrich the next generation to be a good steward of it and grow it?
That's a good message. Like you said, there's a lot of guys, especially in the real estate business, but in the investment world, that are really just looking to promote their own brand. And like you said, get a lot of fanboys and get them to pay $20,000 to come to a seminar. But, you know, you do it from a standpoint of, you know, making a better generation of investors and people with money. I think that's one of the big problems. I mean, look, there's a lot of problems with business and small business and how people run the business. They don't put things in writing. They don't plan. They don't do this. But we are really, really bad when it comes to money. I mean, really bad. And it's because we don't really learn it anywhere. And right. We can learn it, but we're, you know, it's easier to not and to make bad decisions. So,
right. I mean, it's easier for me because, you know, we work with clients that are more higher net worth. So, you know, these guys aren't bad with money. I mean, if you guys are bad with money, you guys probably shouldn't follow me, right? There's a whole myriad of different personal finance blogs trying to get people out of debt.
Right.
I mean, we're kind of taking people who are already going 40, 50 miles an hour, take them up to 100.
Now you are, right? But when you got started, you were saving money and trying to do the right thing and, you know, realize things that other people didn't realize.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Get your first rental property, right? And like I said, a lot of that information is free on the website. Go grab it for yourselves.
Right. So your website, simplepassivecashflow.com, right, is the main website?
That's correct.
They can connect with the podcast there and everything else you do.
That's correct. Yeah. Email address is lane@simplepassivecashflow.com.
Okay. And I'll put that all in the show notes. I thank you for joining me, whether it was your publicist or some other way we got connected. I appreciate it. And let's definitely stay in touch because I'm a big real estate guy. I do it more on the legal side, but I love working with people who work in the real estate business. So I thank you. I know your day's just getting started in Hawaii. So I appreciate you spending some time with me.
Yeah. Thanks, Mitch.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.